Fair warning, this show contains strong language and adult themes from time to time. Sorry, Jerry can't help it.
Sick Boy Wolfgang Productions presents The Offering with Jerry Horror. A deep dive into the history of film and its filmmakers. Mostly horror, always genre.
Stay spooky all year long at Strange Love Parlor, Long Island's exquisite oddities and curiosity parlor in Lindenhurst, New York. They've got some ghastly apparel. Strange Love Parlor supplies an array of goth jewelry, unisex horror-themed gear, Halloween accoutrement, monstrous purses and wallets, spooky pins, patches, and stickers, providing you with the most wonderful and the most strange of treasures. Visit Strange Love Parlor regularly to find the item of your dreams, or perhaps even your nightmares. Grab your ghoul gang and visit today. Strange Love Parlor in Lindenhurst, Long Island, New York.
Calling all foodies, Northern Queens residents with a sweet tooth have found a new spot to sink their teeth into. Fern and Aurora's handcrafted French and Filipino-inspired desserts and pastries. Located next to the Little Neck LIRR, this cute little gem of bakery features many popular Filipino ingredients with all of their desserts. With a rotating menu to keep things interesting, one of the best things I loved, absolutely loved, was their honey cake. Sweetness perfection, and they add a textural touch to their honeycomb. I inhaled that real quick, let me tell you. And of course, you gotta try the ube cupcake. Ube is the hot new thing. Filipino foodies have always known about it. Their Filipino donuts seem to be the most popular items, selling out by 10 a.m. every day. And their Basque burnt cheesecake was worth the drive. I'm drooling over here just thinking about it. You've heard about it. Now is the time to get your own ube coffee or deliciously cold Halo Halo. And they have introduced their Milo frozen hot chocolate. God, this sounds amazing. Try something new. Fern and Aurora, located at 3902 Little Neck Parkway, New York. Ube or not ube? That is the question.
Welcome to The Offering with Jerry Horror, the show where we can have a quiet and frank discussion as adults about the things that matter to me, or at least that I think matter to me. Please take a moment to subscribe to our show wherever you get fine podcasts, and hey, stay up to date on future episodes.
Coming up, he was a global megastar that could do no wrong. He had yet to make a true flop in Hollywood. From video games and toys, this megawatt talent demanded control over every aspect of the production of this film. Originally, this film was written as an R-rated bloodbath and somehow got repackaged as a kid's matinee delight. This is the story of the movie that tried to slay the dinosaurs of Jurassic Park. Spoiler alert, the dinosaurs won. Ladies and gentlemen, friends from beyond the binary, it's me, Jerry Horror. It's The Offering. And here we go. We're on Long Island. Obviously, that's where this podcast emanates from most of the time. We're outside. There's dogs barking. There's birds chirping. There's bees a-buzzing. It is beautiful. I wish you were here with me because then I wouldn't feel so lonely. My existential loneliness is truly killing me. I know exactly what Britney Spears was talking about now. My loneliness. Sorry, it's not going to be that kind of podcast. Or is it? I don't know. Let's see. I might have to finish the other 5-hour energy. I've given up. I've given up like Red Bull and like Monster. It's just too much carbonation. It's too much. You know, when I want my carbonation, I have, you know, some seltzer. But it's just too much. So I've switched over to the 5-hour energy. And I feel like it's more measured. Like I can measure how much caffeine I'm consuming, like by like these little gulps and shots. It works for me. So if anyone out there knows someone at 5-Hour Energy, we are willing to come to the table and just talk to producer Pete, see if 5-Hour Energy can be a 5-star stunner for The Offering podcast. God damn, I am so desperate. We have so many great supporters, we've got so many great advertisers, but I would really love 5-Hour Energy. God, what do I have to do? Who runs that place? Is it even an American company? Like, it seems so, like, mysterious. There's never been a spokesperson. Like, I feel like a real spokesperson. Who do you get? Brett the Hitman Hart? No, you get Jerry Horror, because he'll come down and do that shit, and he'll do it a lot cheaper than, well, actually, I don't know. Have you seen Bret the Hitman Hart lately? No, that's wrong. It's funny, though. There's these commercials from the 90s that he did for a bunch of pizzerias that are in Toronto. And man, Jesus, those are some terrible commercials, but they are amusing to watch. Speaking of which, I'm writing a book. Did I tell you guys I'm writing a book? Well, now, officially, it's on the books that I'm writing a book. Doing a book. It's about my life. Talking about, well, it's kind of hard to preface, but I'll explain it as much as I can. I grew up, obviously, in the 90s. And this is a portrait, a snapshot of that decade. And what I do is, as the delivery device to the stories, talk about the movies that I was watching, you know, seeing stuff theatrically. There's a great chapter on Godzilla 97, or was it Godzilla 98? Who knows? By that point, there was a lot of substances in the mix, but it feels freeing. These are things that when I went back and I'm like trying to remember these things, it unlocked a lot of stuff. You know, it's hard. Doing a chapter the other day about my mother, it was not easy. Luckily, producer Pete helped me get over that hump. I wrote the chapter, and here we are. So you're going to be seeing this book sooner than later. And if you want the real shit, not that fake stuff, not the Wonder Years censored for television, this is like the Wonder Years meets Stand By Me meets Go. Did anybody see Go? Do you know what Go is? It's a movie. Somebody made a movie named Go. I don't know. Who's in it? Who's in that movie? The guy who was, Justified. Timothy Oliphant, thank you. We talked about this, but Timothy Oliphant was supposed to be the Vin Diesel character, the Dominic Toretto in the Fast and Furious movies. I don't know how that would have worked. I feel like it wouldn't have. The other thing, too, is with the Oliphant as Dominic Toretto, they gave him the script and he's like, no. And like, he wasn't in a position to turn that down. He was still very young in his career. You know, he was just coming off of Scream 2 at that point. So for him, a lead in a movie, that was a big deal. But he knew, this is not me. I can't play this guy. Sometimes you think about these characters in movies, like who else could have played it? Morgan Freeman couldn't have been taken, like Liam Neeson. Morgan Freeman is taken. I don't know. But that would have been interesting, right? Today's episode is very much a counterpoint or a piece to the Cobra episode. It ties into what was going on in the late 80s, early 90s, especially in the action movie scene. Because it's hard. Like, even like explaining to kids now, like, we didn't have these superheroes. We just had some jacked up Euro trash, you know, for the most part. And hey, it was really cool in the Barbie movie to see that Ryan Gosling was giving all that love to Sylvester Stallone. So that was very cool. If you didn't see Barbie this summer, really, what are you doing with your life? It's incredible. Go and see it. It's a magical movie. I really enjoyed it. But this episode has nothing to do with toys. Or does it? I guess you're going to have to listen to the rest of the episode to find out. Because yes, this film, there were toys produced. They even tried to do a cartoon, but the film ended up underperforming, and that never came to fruition. Look, folks, you could have been anywhere in the world, but you're here with me, your pal Jerry. Let's get into it. I hope that you've had a wonderful day or evening. I don't know where you are, but, you know, you can always hit me up on social media. Don't be shy. I'm on Instagram. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Threads. I'm on antidepressants. I'm on all kinds of shit, you know? Fuck around and find out. Let's jump into this episode, and I will see you on the other side. Nobody ever wants to take a beating, but that summer, it was my turn. Arnold Schwarzenegger, 1994. Sony was so afraid that audiences wouldn't understand this movie that they made the trailer. One of the first trailers for this movie was 3 minutes and 13 seconds, and I can promise you, you feel all 3 minutes and 13 seconds, so that they can explain to the dummies in the back row what this movie was about. Of course, the film that we're talking about is Last Action Hero, the 1993 cult classic. And I thought in a lot of ways when I was doing research for this episode that Last Action Hero is pretty much Scream for 80s action films. Like, it's self-referential, it's meta. I think it was too meta and too self-aware for its own good at the time. I'm not sure that audiences were completely ready for this movie. I've tried to figure it out and what exactly went wrong, but there's a lot of things. We're going to unpack it, but man, it's one of those deals, like, I feel that if you would have made this movie in the early 2000s, I think audiences would have been more receptive to it. They would have been ready. But in 93, they weren't ready.
Negotiations with the madman known as the Ripper have totally broken down, and there is no word on the hostages.
Police have surrounded the ground floor, and SWAT teams are moving into position.
Oh my God, they're shooting at us! Get down!
The situation is out of control. The police are pinned down.
The special hostage negotiator has been called in.
What they need down here is an armored division, and this is complete insanity. I've never seen anything like this.
Right now, there's a truck directly in the line of fire coming.
This may be the hostage negotiator police we're talking about.
It's Slater!
You may remember Detective Slater from an earlier story. He is notorious in police circles for his unusual tactics and...
Don't even think it, Slater! You hear me?
Nonetheless, Slater is known throughout the city as someone who gets the job done.
Now you go in there, and it's your badge!
Sorry, not yet. Come back later.
Arnold Schwarzenegger, Last Action Hero, the big ticket for 93.
So we talked in one of the last episodes about Cobra. This ties in very nicely. There's a dovetail, and it's very organic, but you're going to have to journey with me back to the year 1990. A private plane carrying Hollywood's elite went to a million-dollar party in Cannes. Drugs, drink, it all ensued. The event? Carlico Pictures was celebrating one of their many cinematic successes with Arnold and Sylvester Stallone. The Rambo franchise, Universal Soldier, Total Recall, Basic Instinct, these guys were making money hand over fist at that point in time. They were ready to celebrate the release of a little film called Terminator 2, Judgment Day. Now, you have to imagine that this plane was basically full of everyone in Hollywood. They chartered out a private jet, obviously, to France, to the Cannes Film Festival, but this party, literally, it cost over $1 million to throw this party. And on this plane, I'm talking everyone's there. Everybody from Antonio Banderas to Harrison Ford, Mick Jagger was on that plane, Jean-Claude Van Damme, Sharon Stone, even MC Hammer and Brian Bosworth. Clint Eastwood was staying at the same hotel where they threw the party, and he ended up showing up. It was wild. That plane ride was, it was literally everybody in Hollywood on that plane doing drugs. At one point, Arnold even said that Michael Douglas passed him a joint, and he said, okay, I'll take it. Because what are you going to do when Michael Douglas offers you weed? I mean, I'm hitting it. What am I going to say to him, right? Like, you can't say no. You could. That's probably not in your best interest. This party was mostly a ruse, okay? The people at Carlico had secretly put this party together so that they could get Sly and Arnold into one picture. And they did their damnedest. This was like one of those things where, like you see on Full House, they're trying to set their dad up on a date. And that's what they were trying to do. And Sly and Arnold had this really weird relationship where it's like they both respected each other, but they were the competition. It was like an old school rivalry that these guys were trying to do their best. Who could have the biggest guns? Who could have the biggest explosions? Who could do more? And I think that as we ramp up into this time of the early 90s, this is kind of the end of that cycle. And we're going to get to like who was doing what as far as projects, but just follow along with me. They wanted to do this movie. Their egos would never allow it. Both of them. And it's such a shame. One of the projects that they wrote for them, it was terrible. It actually ended up being reworked into Tango and Cash. But the original script that they wanted Arnold and Sly to do was a script called Drag. And in Drag, I mean, this is like, this shit would not fly in 2023. But they were both undercover police officers dressed as women. And I got to tell you, look, that might have been funny for like a Saturday Night Live skit. But sustaining that for 90 minutes of Arnold and Sly and Drag, oof. It was one of those things, too. Like, Schwarzenegger, he did Kindergarten Cop. And then he made the fake play to say that he was going to do stop or my mom will shoot. And that was a ruse. It was another, like, because Arnold, listen, man, Stallone was playing checkers, but Arnold was playing chess. He basically knew the movie was a stinker and almost tricked, well, he didn't almost, he tricked Stallone's people into thinking that this was going to be the next big comedy blockbuster with Ivan Reitman and Stallone. It didn't happen. It's terrible. I've recently watched Stop or My Mom Will Shoot. Like, God bless her soul. Like, Estelle Getty is great. It's a terrible movie. It's awful. It's such a weird, weird movie. At this party, the two did dance together comically, with Stallone complaining, "I hate that Arnold always has to lead." And he said, "God damn it, Arnold, I hate you." And him, Stallone and Arnold, they laughed, and they ended up having a couple of drinks together. But the brass at Carlico ultimately couldn't find a screenplay where the two of them would work together. This whole drag idea was ridiculous. And I think that's why, like, when we talk about, like, what's true, what's not, definitely print the legend on this shit, because it's a terrible script, which kind of birthed, it morphed into another thing with Tango and Cash. There was a whole opening sequence in Tango and Cash where they were going to do the whole Kurt Russell and Stallone in drag. There is a sequence where that stayed in the film where Kurt Russell is playing a woman. It's just not very, you know, it's like we were talking about, we're going through all these shows like Showtime. We're talking about like Weeds, Californication, and just the deplorable humor and stuff just does not fly. Like, some of that stuff is not aged well, and it's barely been 20 years. So a movie with Sylvester Stallone and Arnold Schwarzenegger where they play transvestites probably was not the big look that they were trying to go for. But hey, in some other weird multiverses we've discovered, because man, fucking Hollywood loves their multiverses. They can't get enough of that shit, obviously. Didn't really work out for them with The Flash. Oof. Oof. And you know, here's the thing. I liked The Flash. The Flash was a good movie. I enjoyed it. I thought it was good. It flopped, you know? Look, I don't know what to tell you. Maybe you're living in the timeline where it was a big hit. So as much as Carlico tried, they could not make this movie happen. This party, though, in 1990 in Cannes was a monument to success. It was basically the last big blowout for a lot of these stars in the 1980s. I mean, come on. MC Hammer even performed a song at this party. Doesn't that tell you everything? Because I feel like MC Hammer lives and dies in this very small context. You know, like, he's hot for a couple of years. Like, he has the cartoon, he has all this stuff, and it just ends. And then, like, the mid-90s, you have, like, the rise of gangster rap. You've got Dr. Dre, you got Tupac, you got Snoop. And it's just like, no, you can't be a commercial dude who sings songs and dances. Even though MC Hammer came from the streets. Everybody knows, you know, other than being he was a bat boy. Dear God. He's the Oakland A's. He was a bat boy. Cool stuff, man. Good for him. God bless. So in 1992, Carlico and their financial troubles really wouldn't start to set in, because what happens is they start overspending. Like with Rambo 3 and stuff like that, they're just spending so much money and they're doing whatever they can to keep Stallone and Schwarzenegger happy. In the end, after generating billions of dollars in revenue, one film would sink their ship. The 1995 film Cutthroat Island, which was intended to be the big comeback for the studio, but instead lost $147 million and put Carlico so deep in debt that they had to file bankruptcy, but they had to sell off everything. So it sucks because a lot of that library, like you've got films like Total Recall, Basic Instinct, they've been sold and bought like 100 times by different distribution companies. And it sucks because it's like the same thing with the Canon Films library. Like, I wish it was all centralized. That's why it's like, it's cool when you have Christopher Nolan. Like, he did all those movies at Warner Brothers. They live and die there. Clint Eastwood did all those movies at Warner Brothers. And like, there's a centralized location and studio, and also somebody that's there to take care of these films and curate them for future audiences. As Stallone wanted control over Cobra, Arnold wanted the same thing for Last Action Hero. Total control, from the rooter to the tutor, as they say down south. He made sure that no decision would be made, major decision and minor. He was basically megalomaniacal on this film. He had to control every aspect of it. And that goes back to a man who built his career by forcing his body to grow and controlling his image. And he realized, like, wait a sec, now with Terminator 2 Judgment Day, like, this is a gigantic global hit. It sent everybody back to the drawing board. It was the first. There's Die Hard and then Terminator 2. And these are movies that are, like, pivotal turning points for the genre, for the action genre. And I got to tell you, expectations were high after T2. How do you follow that movie? It's such a big part of the culture, even now. And it's an unenviable task. It's kind of one of those things. It's a situation that Stallone had with Rambo, First Blood Part 2. What do you do to top it? Because it's a movie that becomes like this indelible part of pop culture. And then you're forced, because some studio's like, hey, listen, he made a ton of money with that. And they thought that Cobra would be the killer. You know, it would be his version of Dirty Harry, and that it would be this big thing. But ultimately, the mistake they made was going head-to-head with Top Gun. And as we get into this, you're going to see that Arnold makes a big mistake too. But it's really not his fault. That's the CEO of Sony at the time. We'll get there. So what was Arnold up to? Well, he did Kindergarten Cop and Total Recall previous to Terminator 2. And those were big hits. They made a lot of money. These were pretty sizable hits. Schwarzenegger was looking for a project that would combine the comedy that he had found with Ivan Reitman along with the action that James Cameron had provided. He wanted the best of both worlds in a big box office bow. So every studio is going nuts because now Arnold is this gigantic superstar. And they're just trying to say to themselves, how can we make money off of this? What do we put him in next? What's the next role? Stallone at this point, right around, you know, like 91, 90s, he's getting his ass kicked. He did Rocky V, which I like Rocky V a lot. I think it's a great movie. It's goofy. I like it. It's endlessly quotable. He did Oscar, which if you haven't seen Oscar, that's the one where he's Marissa Tomei's father. And it's set in the 1930s, and it's just not very good. I've tried. It's not terrible, but look, if you have that or the knife infomercial where the guy's trying to sell you knives, watch the knife infomercial. You might learn some stuff there. For all of you who are not cord cutters, I don't even know. Again, Pete was telling me that people who watch sports, because I'm not really a big sports guy, they still watch terrestrial television with commercials, and man, that is a trip. I can't even believe the stuff that they're selling on there. Doesn't matter where you go, though, whether it's podcasts, television, or even the internet, somebody's trying to sell you boner pills. And that's the real takeaway. So yeah, after that, okay, so he does Rocky V, he does Oscar, and then he does Stop or My Mom Will Shoot. So this is the beginning of the 90s for Sly, and people are like, yo, this guy, he needs a hit. He needs something that's going to make money. Hollywood, the general public, they have a short memory. It's the way it always works. It's what have you done for me lately? And especially in Hollywood, it's what have you done last? What was your last hit? What can you parlay into your next big success? Unfortunately, it was a different world. At this point, Fox as a station, as a network, is really coming into its own. But before that, it was like ABC, NBC, and CBS. You know, your big three stations. In New York, we had Channel 11, which is an affiliate. But I guess what I'm trying to say is that at that point, everybody was on the same page. It was a much smaller world. We were all watching the same movies. Chances are you were listening to the same bands. It was just everybody was on the same page. Fortuitously, that year, Stallone would drop Cliffhanger with Carlico. That was a Carlico-produced joint. And Demolition Man for Warner Brothers in 1993. So he had those three movies, Rocky V, Oscar, Stop My Mom Will Shoot. And those were like kind of flops, to be perfectly honest. So for Stallone, this is his rebound. He's on the come up. Okay, he has two big hits that same year. Now let's talk a little bit about the development of Last Action Hero. The film was original screenplay by Zach Penn and Adam Leff. These guys were basically college students from Connecticut, and they had meant to write a screenplay that was basically a parody of action film screenplays from Shane Black, who famously wrote Lethal Weapon, pretty much every damn action movie of the 80s. He was a big Joel Silver guy. did Commando. They went and they looked at those screenplays and they said, shit, how can we turn this into something, you know, something that would be really funny to them? So Zach Penn and Adam Left, they write this screenplay and they use Shane Black's films as a template. And then it's funny because ironically, Shane Black would do the rewrite that they produce the film. And it just shows you, like, everything about Last Action Hero is about excess. It's a total exercise in excess of the early 90s, the studio system. So they write this script that they thought was funny. One night, they got really drunk, and they're like, let's go to the video store. Let's find every action movie we can, like every Steven Seagal movie. And they took all the tropes, they took everything, and threw it into this screenplay. Now, initially, the original screenplay differs heavily from what is in the finished film. It's out there. You can read it. It's widely available to read online. But it was a parody. It was set almost entirely in the film world and focused largely on the feudal cycle of violence that occurs in these films, displayed by the hero and the effect that all of this violence has, like his loved ones, his mailman. Like, how does it affect everybody that he's in this hyper-violent world? Due to the radical changes, Penn and Left were eventually credited with the story of the film, but not the screenplay, because several script doctors were hired and did uncredited work on this film, including Carrie Fisher, Larry Ferguson, and William Goldman. Penn and Left, they disliked various parts of the final film, including the idea of a magic golden ticket. That was something they were vehemently against. And in their draft, the story would not explain how Danny got transported into the film world. It was just kind of this nebulous thing that happens. But again, this is from Sony, the studio that gave people a 3 minute and 13 second trailer. After you're done with this episode, or if you want to pause it, watch that trailer. It is them explaining to you, like, and this is what happens. And the reason it's like, it's basically a trailer for dummies. And I think that Last Action Hero represents that high concept thing that was kind of happening, like Ghostbusters. Like, what's it about? It's these guys, they start a business and they become Ghostbusters. And I think that was kind of the idea there, was like, okay, well, it's an action movie within an action movie, and it parodies all the things that we've seen. Now, Left and Penn were basically college students. They got this script made. They still got paid. They got a paycheck. They went on to do other things, but I couldn't imagine it. Like, the story of how this movie gets made is insane, because you got these two guys, they're college students in Connecticut. Sony Pictures decide, you know, Columbia TriStar decides to pick up their screenplay. It's really a Cinderella story, but the movie gets changed so much. I mean, like, again, they had several script doctors. And Shane Black was very critical of the movie, and I think Shane Black's a fucking genius. I think he is. I mean, if you've seen Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, the other guys, the nice guys, excuse me, the other guys, that was the Mark Wahlberg, Will Ferrell joint. The Nice Guys is great. Kiss Kiss Bang Bang is great. Iron Man 3 is great. It's crazy, because Iron Man 3 is basically the big fuck you. It's like Robert Downey Jr. was like, hey, I'm not going to do Iron Man 3 unless you hire Shane Black. And then they hired Shane Black, and basically the two of them strong-armed the whole thing. Like, well, what's it about? I don't know. Tony Stark starts having PTSD and panic attacks. Really? This is what your summer blockbuster movie is going to be grounded in? Yeah, fuck it. That's the movie you want to make. If you don't like it, we'll go do something else. And I love that, because that's the fuck you button. And you have to get a certain amount of status and control in any, no matter what you're doing, to be like, fuck you, I don't want to do it. And that's what we talk about. Fuck you money. Right now, your mom's listening to you listening to this podcast, like, he curses a lot. He says a lot of swear words. I don't know why you'd be listening to this with your mother. Maybe your mom's really cool. How's your mom look? Tell her to give me a call. It's cool. Shane Black was very critical of this movie, though. It was a mess. There was a movie in there somewhere struggling to emerge, which would have pleased me. But what they made, what they turned it into, was a series of jarring, random collection of scenes that really didn't gel together. That's a direct quote. Arnold Schwarzenegger thought this, this is funny, because it's the flip side of that. Schwarzenegger thought it was one of the best scripts he had ever read. He especially liked all the elements of comedy, action, drama, and satire. And this is where we run into trouble. There's like a spectrum of things that you need to hit when you make a movie and they test screen and audience. You have to hit these beats. Will it appeal to children? Will it appeal to older people? Will hot young Filipinas, will they enjoy this film? That's a big thing. I'm concerned. I want to know what they like. He demanded a PG-13 movie, though. Schwarzenegger was like, I'll do this, but it's got to be PG-13. I've got a huge audience full of children. And this is the way it needs to be now, because that was a big deal. There was even a PG-13 cut released of Terminator 2 that was floating around. I think it was more in the southern states of the United States that, they didn't like all the violence, but they loved Arnold. And they loved the big thing, because basically this is why Terminator 2 works, and I'll tell you why it works. It's basically a boy and his robot story, and that always works. They did it with Bumblebee, where it's a girl and her robot, and that kind of thing always resonates with people. They get it. So they're looking to capitalize and build off the success of Terminator 2. So they make a decision to put him with a kid, and I think that is where they made their first mistake. I think that was a critical error. So he demands a PG-13 rating. He's like, I need to get the widest audience so that we can make our money back. Because now, Arnold isn't just making like movies like Raw Deal. He's making movies that have to play in every country, in every language. And they've got to be very broad and big for people to understand. Schwarzenegger receives a salary of $15 million for his role in the film, plus back-end deals and merchandising. And I got to tell you, he controls every aspect of this film with an iron fist. Like I said, they were trying to do a Saturday morning cartoon. There's toys from Mattel. We'll get into that. He needed to control every part of it. And the problem is here's what happens. When you try to please everybody, you end up pleasing nobody. And the more in life that you try and control, it's cool. If you want to be the master of your own destiny, that's fine. When you're dealing with these large corporations, there's no way that you can micromanage this entire process. There's entire divisions of people that it's their job to take care of these things. Schwarzenegger received a salary of $15 million for his role in the film, plus back-end deals and merchandising. And when we talk about sweet, sweet back-end deals, he was getting a piece of every dollar. Not the profit, the gross. And that's a big difference. You can look up why. This is not that kind of fucking podcast. I'm not explaining these mathematics to you because that's not what I do. That's what the RZA does. The RZA, the JZA, ODB. I don't know. It's the Wu-Tang Clan. There ain't nothing to fuck with. Universal moved Jurassic Park to June 11th, 1993. Well after Sony had decided on June 18th release date for Last Action Hero. Now, the movie was reportedly going to have an advertisement placed on a space-going rocket. And that tells you everything that's wrong with this movie. Because now we're putting Schwarzenegger's face on a rocket that's going to space. We're just whatever. But that's not what I'm trying to convey here. What I'm trying to convey here is, once Universal came in and they put the June 11th release date, Sony could have moved the movie. We're talking 1992 that these decisions are being made. So there's well over 8 months, 9 months to say, hey, we're going to move this. And yeah.
We'll be right back with more of The Offering with Jerry Horror.
RetroSource Long Island is taking you back. Take a trip back in time with their custom-built store, paying tribute to the best decades of all time, the 80s and the 90s. They have a massive collection of video games to choose from, spanning from Atari 2600 to Nintendo Switch, not to mention a large selection of toys, plushies, art, collectibles, board games, and so much more. They've got a friendly and quirky staff that loves to talk to you all about your favorite movies, cartoons, and TV shows that you grew up with. Check out their funny skits on their Instagram at RetroSourceLI. Do you love E.T., Thundercats, Back to the Future, Masters of the Universe, RoboCop, Street Fighter, Knight Rider, Ninja Turtles, Pokemon, Power Rangers? Yeah, man, RetroSource has got you covered. Take a photo in their Saved by the Bell high school locker display. It's totally mint. Spend hours playing arcade games while getting a sugar rush from vintage candy and soda. It's gnarly, buddy. Located at 1075 Portion Road in Farmingville, New York, RetroSource, Long Island's most radical shopping experience. It's always Halloween at the Haunted House of Hamburgers, Long Island's only Halloween-themed restaurant. At Haunted House of Hamburgers, they are obsessed with both Halloween and hamburgers, so why not have the best of both worlds every day? Salivate over their delicious hamburgers during Boo Brunch, along with their Witch's Brew and Crypt Keeper cocktails. Or take a stab at the undead desserts, such as Ice Cream Sundaes, with your bobbing for apple pie. My favorites are the Afterlife Alcoholic Shakes. I'd go for the Pentagram Passion Fruit, or the Exorcism Espresso Martini Shake. Or my go-to, the Loch Ness Monster Lobster Rolls. This place is fun as hell. They even encourage you to come dine in, dressed in costume. Your kids will love that. Or that could be one hell of a memorable first date. They're not going to forget that, right? Here's a little insider tip. For a far-out trippy dining experience, ask your waiter for 3D glasses. It's pretty rad, let me tell you. Located at 330 Fulton Street in Farmingdale, New York, it's the restaurant that looks like a haunted house. You won't miss it, I promise. Make Haunted House of Hamburgers your year-round Halloween destination. Listeners and fans of The Offering can get their hands on their very own The Offering with Jerry Hara merch, now only at Tee Public. Find your own fresh The Offering with Jerry Hara high-quality merchandise, including t-shirts, hoodies, tank tops, long sleeves, stickers, and mugs. Just like the show, we've got gear that's mostly horror, always genre. The Offering with Jerry Hara Tee Public store has everything you need to represent your favorite podcast. Folks, head on over to teepublic.com right now and pick up your very own Offering Tee today. You're listening to The Offering with Jerry Hara. Got a question or story you want to share with me? It might be featured in a future episode. Email me at jerryhara@gmail.com or hit me up on Twitter at Jerry Hara. I'm also on Instagram. You can find me there at Jerry Hara. Rate and review this show on Apple Podcasts, and you might find your review in an upcoming episode. And if you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to The Offering. Now back to the show. So Schwarzenegger wanted this movie to be PG-13. It had to be. It had to appeal to that big demographic. So this is the first time that he's executive producer on a movie. So he approved the script, director, casting, studio, finance, distribution, marketing, budget, PR firm, and the planning of foreign releases. Now, do you think this guy at this point, Schwarzenegger, has his hand in too many pies? There's just too many plates spinning right now. You can't. Look, it's cool to be hands-on in what you do, but this is Schwarzenegger's first mistake because now his head is not in the game just as a star. He's doing everything. He's got every component of this film as a whole is being managed by him, micromanaged. So during a late night production meeting, he says, look, I think John McTiernan's the guy. I think he's the only guy who can pull this movie off. Obviously, he had done Predator with McTiernan, and McTiernan did Die Hard, which basically changed action cinema as we know it. Now, this is a very interesting story, and this is very key to our story, so pay attention, folks. So late one night, McTiernan, he basically said to Schwarzenegger while they're, you know, making this movie, he's like, Arnold, we're making E.T. He goes, we're not making an action movie. And he goes, what do you mean? And this brings Schwarzenegger down quite a bit. And he's like, listen, we made a mistake here. And he's like, and Schwarzenegger's like, what's the mistake? We should not have made this kid friendly. And this really brings Arnold down. And this is like during the middle of production. He's like, shit. So McTiernan and Schwarzenegger start trying to like pump more of the R-rated vibe and that energy. So they're doing reshoots. They're changing things. But the studio comes back and they're like, no, we really want a PG-13 movie because we like money. And it becomes to that whole thing of Eddie Murphy set this up and it's brilliant. He said, when I was making 48 Hours, I would get two people on a date. If I make The Nutty Professor, I get the whole family. I get grandma, I get the kids, and it's just basic math. I get it, and Eddie's right, but you have to be careful because what happens is once you get used to that, those big, big hits that are catering to all the demographics, the big summer tent poles, that's when you get into trouble because then you're not making movies out of passion. You're making movies out of commerce. And I get it. That's why it's called the movie business. Oh, speaking of John McTiernan, you remember this guy? He directed Rollerball, the 2002 remake of Rollerball. The same director that had made... Because here's the thing. In between Die Hard and Last Action Hero, he makes Medicine Man with Sean Connery, if you remember that one. Did not exactly ignite the box office on fire. It's a fine film. It's a movie that your parents would watch. They'd love it. But it's obviously just like every other Sean Connery movie. It's a woman that's like a quarter of his age, but that's fine. That's his thing. You know, we kind of, that was the whole thing with like James Bond. You had Roger Moore and he's with this woman who's 20 years old and he's like almost 70. And that became more taboo. Like you can't do that now. That's where everything became like, oh, the love interest has to be age appropriate. And that's like a thing that we're very cognizant of now. Shit, we're watching Californication. That was not the case, man. Old ass David Duchovny sleeping with all them young girls. Woo. That's what we call a fantasy fulfillment. So John and Arnold McTiernan were cigar buddies, enthusiasts, if you will. So there was never a problem, considering they had made Predator together, they had a good rapport, and they had their cigars, and they were very happy. I got to work with John McTiernan. I did security. Wow, Thomas Crown Affair. And I got to tell you, really nice guy. Like, really, really lovely guy. Yeah, I have nothing bad to say about him. He was very nice to everybody, very gracious, and he didn't have to be. He did not have to answer my stupid questions, but he did. And that's pretty cool. Again, it was the Chris Farley skit on SNL. It's like, wow, you're Paul McCartney. You know, and that's how I was. Like, wow, you made Die Hard. Hey, everybody, it's the guy who made Die Hard. Have you seen this guy? Yeah. Okay. Sure. I was bad at my job. That's why I'm... Three people stole a bunch of shit, and I'm there, and I'm like, so what's Bruce like, yeah? Fucking, what a ridiculous piece of shit I am. I hate myself. I'm stopping this pod. Listen, the podcast is canceled. I wish I could add in the foley of the footsteps and the door slamming. So some would say that Schwarzenegger almost knew that he was making a bad decision with the entire film. There were tons of reshoots for this movie. We talk about now, like, the big thing, like, this summer, obviously, is that they're reshooting Aquaman for the fourth time. They've had Keaton Batman. They've had Affleck Batman. They've cut them out of the movie. So now with less Batman, now with no Batman. James Gunn this summer has a very unenviable task of trying to make people go see Aquaman 2. And I guess we're going to find out. And maybe you're listening to this episode in the future, and Aquaman 2 has been the highest grossing film of all time. And I'm fine with that. It is what it is, man. People love Jason Momoa. Look, it is what it is, right? You gotta do it while you know. It's fine. No, I'm not going to say anything. No. Okay. I like Jason Momoa. Jason Momoa is not an actor. He's a movie star. And that's fine, because that's what Schwarzenegger was. Schwarzenegger was a personality. I can't say, like, he's done stuff. Like, he did Maggie, the zombie movie, and that had some decent acting from him. But Schwarzenegger is, you know what you're getting into. Arnold is a personality, and this is the commodification of that personality. Like, we've just boiled everything down to its essence, and that's what Last Action Hero is. So now that Schwarzenegger knows that he's making kind of a bad movie, he starts pushing everybody. There's like all these reshoots, and he's pushing John McTiernan, he's pushing the cast, and he's pushing the crew. Everybody's going beyond their physical and mental means, but Schwarzenegger's crazy. It's Mr. Universe, Mr. Olympia. He will push his body. He will do things that other people are not willing to do to become successful. And he tried to flex that. No pun intended. Maybe the pun was intended. I don't know. But he tried to push everybody as far as they could. And they were like, listen, no matter what you do, this movie is not going to be everything to everyone. And you have to accept that. Schwarzenegger thinks back to the time that they made Conan the Destroyer as a PG film. And it killed the box office. The first Conan the Barbarian is a certified classic. It's like a top 20 movie for me. And Conan the Barbarian needs to be an R-rated movie. It needs to be violent. There needs to be orgies. There needs to be all kinds of shit in there. That's what barbarians do. And as per usual, the producer, Dino De Laurentiis, was pissed off. Man, he fucking hated Arnold Schwarzenegger. but he was hoping to get a return on investment because now, like, it was like the year after Terminator. 85, so he's like, this is it, I'm going to finally make my money with the Schwarzenegger, he's going to give me the big blockbuster I need. And it was like, nope, it's a PG movie with fucking Grace Jones and Wilt Chamberlain and Andre the Giant as a rubbery monster in the end. The less said about Conan the Destroyer, the better. Speaking of which, Arnold decides to meet with Mattel to make the Last Action Hero toys. He asked them, his first request was, listen, I have a young audience, and I'd like you to eliminate all guns in the toy line. And again, this is, we're coming out of the 80s. We're coming out of the excess. We're coming out of the Reagan years. We're coming out of the big guns. And the... So now he says, look, and this is a big deal. Even in the time that I worked with WWE and their product abroad, the reason that the WWE product sold so well as far as boys' toys internationally, and I don't even know if we're allowed to say that because now everybody plays with everything, but they liked the WWE product because there was no guns, and that's a big deal. No weapons, for the most part. He told Mattel, this is the 90s, it's not the 80s. This is the new Arnold. And this new Arnold, Kenner did the line of Terminator toys, and they all had guns because it's Terminator. You know, there was that weird phenomenon of, like, where everything, all these 80s movies, like, was Aliens and Rambo, and they all had toy lines. Like, these R-rated movies had toy lines to tie in. So he says, all right, if we're going to do the main figure in the line, I want him to throw a punch and say, big mistake, no guns. So Mattel is like, you know, we kind of got into this whole Schwarzenegger thing because we wanted the big biceps and the big guns. But they're like, all right, we're doing this. And I would also like to say that Mattel, that same year, did the Demolition Man line of toys. Those toys had guns. What was the one thing that was similar between Demolition Man and Last Action Hero toys? Both of them sold nothing. You can get these pretty cheap. Like, if you want a Jack Slater action figure, you can get it pretty cheap. Same with the Demolition Man. There's no love for these characters. But Stallone didn't have a problem. You put a gun in there. You got Wesley, I got a gun. That's all I need. That's your fucking toy line. They needed a believable villain. And this is where things get really interesting. So Charles Dance, who ultimately, from Underworld, a bunch of other stuff, he was ultimately cast in this movie. He said in interviews that he had won the part because it was turned down by Alan Rickman because of the salary. So Alan Rickman was not going to do this movie unless they paid him. And he wore a t-shirt on set that said, I'm cheaper than Alan Rickman, which I think is really kind of funny. Tim Curry was also considered for the role of Benedict the villain. Tim Curry decided to do Home Alone 2. So, yeah, he ended up doing a kid-friendly thing. Really, what happens, and this is the beginning of the end, the film is capsized by a wave of negative publicity after a rough cut was shown to a preview audience in May. Okay? Now, this film is coming out in June. There's not much time to course correct. Truth be told, this movie had to be made in like 9 months. And they needed, for a concept this big, for a movie this big, they needed more time. It wasn't enough, especially with all the reshoots. Sony then destroyed the test cards, and the word of mouth proved to be catastrophic for the film. So anything that transpired, I mean, it was going to get out. Once you have previews with the public, the word of mouth, I mean, now with the internet and the ability for people, it's just out there. If something's rotten, within 5 minutes, the world knows. They were pissed. Sony was like, uh-oh, we've got a problem. Now, Schwarzenegger states that he tried to persuade his co-producers to postpone the film's June 18th release. He said, listen, if we need more time, let's do it. Let's make a commitment to making a better film. We can postpone this. Instead of doing June 18th, let's do July 18th. Sony was like, they turned a complete deaf ear on the grounds that the film would have lost millions of dollars in revenue for every weekend of the summer it ended up missing. Also fearing that delaying the release would create further negative publicity. This is their last chance to get out before it. Schwarzenegger was afraid. At this point, he knows. He's like, he kind of knows what's coming. There became this weird thing that started happening where people who were working on Jurassic Park were kind of like leaking out to the people on, there was like communication. Schwarzenegger was even quoted. I talked to some people that were working on Jurassic Park, and I heard it's not very good. Last Action Hero was the first film to be released using the Sony Dynamic Digital Sound, which is SDDS, which became kind of like the standard in the, kind of, this is 93, so it's like the mid-90s. And I got to tell you, it is what it is. There's other, we'll get to this. But only a few theaters were set up for this new format, and many of those theaters experienced technical problems with the new system. Insiders at Paramount at the time reportedly referred to it as still doesn't do shit. Here's the problem. With the SDDS system, and I saw a lot of movies, if you were going to multiplexes in the 90s and you're going to a decent theater, they were pretty much all running on the Sony Dynamic Digital. And here's the problem. They needed to be calibrated in such a way. It was the same problem they had with the THX sound system, Lucasfilm. They needed to be calibrated every day. Like, if you were showing a movie, you needed to EQ the movie. You needed to know where those explosions were, where the big dramatic... Because if you didn't, it would just sound like shit. It was too hands-on. When you're running a theater, whether you're running a theater in New York or you're running one in the Midwest, it needs to just go. It needs to be plug and play. We can't be fucking around. Just let it play. You're going to have to do what you can to make sure that your consumers, your theater goers, are getting the same experience every time. And unfortunately, I think a lot of these sound systems were a little too complex, especially because, let's be honest, most of the time it was a 17-year-old running the projection. It is what it is. This film grossed approximately $1.1 million in previews the evening of Thursday, June 17th, 1993. And it opened at number 2 at the U.S. box office behind Jurassic Park's second weekend, grossing $14.2 million on its opening weekend from 2,306 theaters. It ended its run with $50 million in the United States and Canada. On a supposed budget of $85 million, globally, The Last Action Hero made $137. Now, they knew going head-to-head with Jurassic Park, and this is a weird summer. Let me just tell you about the trajectory. What movie comes out the week before Jurassic Park and Last Action Hero? Super Mario Brothers, which was another notorious bomb. It's crazy. Just to think they could have gotten out ahead of this. They didn't have to go head-to-head with Jurassic Park. Here's the thing. Jurassic Park is like this huge, huge juggernaut of a movie. People are going to see it. The other movie that is the second highest grossing movie of the summer is a little movie called Sleepless in Seattle. Most of the country was going to see Jurassic Park, and then anybody that was left over was going to see Sleepless in Seattle. So it kind of left Arnold in this precarious situation of, what are we going to do? How are we going to have this film exist among with these other larger hits? There was just no way. You know, and the other thing, too, was that Jurassic Park was making so much money that they had it on more screens. So if you're a theater owner and you've got these four movies all, you know, in June in 1993, you're like, OK, well, I got Mario Brothers. I got Last Action Hero. I got Jurassic Park and Sleepless in Seattle. Now, some places they don't have multiplexes. They don't have 17 screens. So maybe you got two screens. Maybe you got a drive-in. Jurassic Park is such a gigantic hit that it destroys everything. And it plays for months. Even when it was done with its first big run, it just kept playing. I mean, it was insane. I remember seeing Jurassic Park. I also remember seeing Super Mario Brothers that summer. That was a rough one. But I remember seeing Jurassic Park. When the movie was over, they instructed you to get out of your seats and go right to the exit because they were ready to pack in the next showing. And that's the way things worked back then. You know, that's just the way it was. The final declared financial loss for this film was $26 million. But many people believe that the number is closer to $50 million. Others have stated that all corporate deals that Schwarzenegger had made offset the costs greatly. Now, he made deals with everybody from Burger King to Coca-Cola. And I will say, looking back, that those Burger King cups are really cool. They're like these little comic book... It's like a motion thing. It's pretty cool. I think it's neat. And if you can find it, you know, definitely find it. Sony was even more humiliated the weekend after the film opened. They lost 47% of the opening weekend audience, and then they had to contend with Sleepless in Seattle and that opened as the number two film at the box office. By the second week, Last Action Hero came in third, and it was barely making any money. It was just not good. There was a video game based on the film. It's released in 1994 on multiple video game consoles. Versions were released for NES, Super NES, Sega Genesis, Game Boy, Game Gear, and MS-DOS. Versions were also planned for Sega CD and the Master System, but ultimately, due to the film not performing, it didn't do very well or materialize. None of the versions feature guns or any other weapons for Arnold Schwarzenegger. You can go around and punch people. I played the one for NES, and I played the one for Genesis, and they were both terrible, and there's no reason to revisit them. It's cool as a collector's item. If it's something you're nostalgic about from when you were a kid, that's cool too. One of the sweetest pieces of memorabilia for this film is the themed pinball machine, which was released in 1993 by Data East. It's got dialogue by Schwarzenegger himself. It's really cool. If you've ever seen this machine in the wild, it's beautiful. It had stereo sound. It was basically the cream of the crop 1993 pinball machine you could find. The real saving grace of this movie, people especially of a certain age will remember this, was the Last Action Hero soundtrack. The album itself was positively received by active rock radio outlets, and it was certified platinum by August 24th, 1993. I had this soundtrack. I had the single of AC/DC's Big Gun. I still listen to that song. I think it's great. You had Alice in Chains, Megadeth, Queensryche, Def Leppard, Anthrax, Aerosmith, Alice in Chains, Cypress Hill, Fishbone, Tesla, and a track with Michael Kamen featuring Buckethead. Seriously, though, the soundtrack still slaps. Like, it's a really great soundtrack. There's some fantastic acts on there. I would definitely recommend listening to the soundtrack before watching the film. So, in October of 2019, Schwarzenegger revealed that he was willing to star in True Lies 2 and Last Action Hero 2. He said those were probably the most possible legacy sequels to happen. Those were some of his favorite movies. And it's funny because True Lies, after this movie, Schwarzenegger will never really... He's hinted at it as he's gotten older. They did a fantastic documentary on Netflix. It was a three-part series. You can listen to Total Recall, which was the autobiography that Arnold did, which quite a bit of the information in this podcast was gleaned from. So it was nice to hear him talk about these things because, you know, the further we get removed from things and we get older, it's easier to talk about. And I think this really shook him. He thought that he couldn't lose with Last Action Hero. And this was the first time that he really got knocked off his horse. Now, there's people that say at the time that there were political games going on with Sony and whatnot, and Warner Brothers wanted Schwarzenegger at that time, along with a couple of other studios, so they basically put negative publicity out there. Fact or fiction, I mean, it's pretty much on the books that there was a lot of negative publicity generated for Last Action Hero from other studios. Universal was scared. They knew what they had with Jurassic Park, but they were even afraid because it was Schwarzenegger. What killed the dinosaurs? Well, you could say the Ice Age, like Arnold says in Batman and Robin. Nothing was killing the dinosaurs that summer. It was one of those things. You had to be there. Jurassic Park, for better or worse, mostly for better, had consumed the imagination of young people everywhere. I think what happens too with this movie is that Arnold is so shook, he goes back to James Cameron. And James Cameron wasn't really doing much after that. He was researching things. He was trying to figure out where he wanted to go as a filmmaker. And Schwarzenegger said, listen, if I'm going to do another movie, it's got to be with James Cameron. So he waits. And then they put out True Lies. And I think that was the move for both of them. Ultimately, and I love True Lies. I think it's a good movie. It's definitely a classic. But it's one of those things that you start to realize to yourself that you can't live up to that. When you reach the zenith, like Terminator 2 Judgment Day, it's hard. There's no way you're going to top it. And I think that True Lies was probably the closest that we'll ever get to it as far as a piece where the both of them get together. I would have liked to have seen Stephen Lang plays the heavy, the bad guy in the Avatar movies. And I really would have liked to have seen that part for Schwarzenegger. I would have liked to have seen him play a bad guy. Hell, anything. But I think we're at that point where Cameron has a vision for his movies. And Schwarzenegger's doing his own thing. Like he did that movie FUBAR. Excuse me, it's a series. I didn't like it. I didn't think it was very good. Not a recommend from old Jerry. Well, it's about that time in the show where we get to my favorite part, which is an unhinged review. This unhinged review comes from Amazon. This was from June 2nd, 2014. The guy's name is Teals 2016. Really cool. This film may be a tribute to all things action Hollywood, but there were some other things worth enjoying. Right from the start, I wish there had been more of Danny DeVito as the cartoon cat. Of course you do. Of course you do. Because you're a fucking moron. You're like a 5-year-old and you want more of that big fat cartoon cat. Yeah, I love Danny DeVito. We all love Danny DeVito. Anyway, I found the leading lad, Austin O'Brien, okay, though he seemed to stray from whining to the annoyingly overconfident the whole time. Neither of which are appealing traits for me. I found Robert Prosky as the theater attendant more interesting. Danny DeVito still wins, though. He's the best part of this movie. He's barely in this fucking movie. He plays a cartoon cat for 14 seconds. The takeaway for this guy was that, listen, maybe Sony, maybe that was the move. Maybe we should have just made a movie with Arnold and a cartoon cat, because this fucking moron seems that he would love it. Danny DeVito still wins the movie over for me, and overall, this is the perfect film for Arnold Schwarzenegger, as it basically poked fun at what he did best and allowing him to continue doing it. It's good for a laugh, especially at the action movies making fun of it. Enjoy. Wow. The things you find on the internet. Jesus Christ. This guy, oof, what a hot mess. Look, I'm going to tell you the problem. You want me to tell you the problem? Let me sum this all up for you. The problem with Last Action Hero is Austin O'Brien. He's fucking terrible. He makes Eddie Furlong look like an Oscar caliber actor, because I don't know what it is, but he did like Pre-Hysteria, which was like a direct to video movie for Charles Band when he was doing the Full Moon stuff. That was the Moonbeam Productions. They made a bunch of Pre-Hysteria movies with these little stop-motion dinosaurs. And they cast him in that. And I think Charles Band was like, yeah, we put him in it because he was in Last Action Hero and we thought he was going to be a big deal. But I'm going to tell you, that's the problem with this movie. And I'm sorry, I know, you know, Austin O'Brien, like, he's probably, like, alive now, has children or whatever it is. But he's fucking terrible and he sinks this movie. And that was kind of the rumor. One of the last things I want to tell you is, at one point, John McTiernan said to Schwarzenegger, you know what? I think we picked the wrong kid. And that became the rub. The whole rub on the movie then was that this kid is annoying. He's and just doesn't work. And I'll be honest with you, he's shrill, he's terrible, and the movie doesn't work because of him. So that's that. Now, strangely enough, as we record this podcast, it's July 30th, 2023, and it is Arnold Schwarzenegger's birthday. So I think that might be a sign that we're doing the right thing. He turned 76 years young, so happy birthday, Arnold. I can't think of any other fitting tribute than to talk about one of the worst movies you've ever made. Look, is Last Action Hero that bad? Look, it's not terrible. You could do a lot worse. There's a lot of good ideas. But I do think the smart move would have been to make this R-rated. And I think that, I don't know. But then it becomes a problem, because if you've got all these people getting, like, murdered. And let me just say this. Even though Schwarzenegger doesn't use guns and he doesn't use, you know, weapons or whatever, he still kills 36 people in this movie. And if you think about that, like, in today's, like, I don't know what Captain America's body count is, but he throws the shield, people fall over or whatever, you know, you don't really see that. But in this, there's like 36 people get murdered, like murdered. I don't know. I think the thinking was that this kid that Austin O'Brien plays is going to be the audience surrogate. And I think, too, it's kind of like, oh, well, I get to go on the adventure with my hero. And it becomes kind of a way to have this avatar that works as a springboard, like, so that young people can experience everything and feel like they're a part of it. Whereas it's a winning formula for Terminator 2, doubling down on it with Last Action Hero was a mistake. It is. If you look at it now, I feel terrible because you're going to watch the movie, you're going to on Netflix or whatever, you're going to watch it, and this kid just sinks the picture. I'm telling you, man. Kid is box office poison. There's a reason he really never did anything after this. My Girl 2? That's right. He was in My Girl 2. Huh. Producer Pete pulling out the clutch facts. Man, I miss when you could make movies like that. You can't make movies like just My Girl. You know, just... And then, you know, here's the crazy thing about My Girl. In the first movie, spoiler alert, they kill Macaulay Culkin. They kill the kid. He's allergic to bees. And you make a sequel. And you put the kid from Last Action Hero in the sequel. Oof. Just big oof. 90s were crazy, man. Oh, he was in Lawnmower Man, too, which was a fucking terrible movie. It's a great concept. I miss all those movies from the 90s that thought virtual reality was just going to be like this other thing that it never turned into. Wild. Wild stuff. What a time. If you were alive in the 90s, you know what I'm talking about. So maybe you've got some fun facts or a little piece of trivia that you would like to present to me. If you go to the Apple Podcast, you leave a review. I mean, tell everybody that this is the greatest show you've ever heard and that you're willing to kill in my name. I appreciate that. But leave maybe a fun fact, piece of trivia that you enjoy, and I'll read it on the show because that's how I get down. I support the people who support me, and that's how I roll. Ladies, gentlemen, friends beyond the binary, I'm Jerry Hara. This has been The Offering. Mostly Hara, always genre. You've been listening to The Offering with Jerry Hara. I'm very sorry. Produced by Pete Bune. If you have a question or a story you want to share with me, we'd love to hear from you. You can email me at jerryhara@gmail.com or hit us up at Twitter @jerryhara or on Instagram @jerryhara. You getting the picture? Subscribe to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever fine podcasts are provided for you and your family. I want you to enjoy. Just join us next time for another offer.
This has been a Sick Boy Wolfgang production. Thank you for listening.